unlikely to do any harm by reflective listening, and often this skill alone can open up new ground. Empathic listening is also an excellent tool for crossing cultural boundaries. Here, Dr. Miller is interviewing a relatively nonverbal client who was coerced into counseling. Instead of falling into the question-answer trap, he relies almost exclusively on empathic listening during these first 10 minutes of counseling.
John, you called up and I've indicated that you'd like to talk to someone here, and so I'd like to know how I might be helpful to you.
Can anyone hear?
I had to come because of problems.
Some problems you've been having, and someone has made you come here.
Yeah.
You're not too happy about that. Talking to somebody else about them is hard. It's not something you're used to doing.
No.
And yet someone else has said you need to be here. Tell me a little bit about that.
She works and I work and take care of the kids together.
Mm-hmm.
She says she wants to go back and go back to school, you know, study to be a nurse or something. And I don't think she needs to.
That seems silly to you.
We're just doing okay.
You like things the way they are now, and that feels like a real big change.
Yeah.
There's some things about it in particular that you don't like.
It's just everything's okay.
So why change?
Why
mess it up? Things are going along okay, and now she wants to get some more school, get some more education. And it's disturbing. It changes things.
She's got the kids, you know. She's got a job.
She already has enough to keep her busy.
I think so, but she don't. So we argue.
You're happy with the way things are. She's not quite satisfied with how things are, and she wants something else. She wants to get some education. And that's not okay with you.
She says things would be better. I can see that, I guess, but she's got plenty to do, you know. Everything's okay. She just keeps on and on about it.
It's really important to her.
I guess. Sometimes I just wish she'd shut up, you know.
Your worry may be that things will be worse if she goes back to school, but somehow it won't be as good as it is now.
Yeah, I mean, she would go back to school and, you know, flunk out, or she might go back to school and decide she don't want nothing no more. She don't want no family.
One thing that might happen that would hurt a lot, if she went back to school, she might decide she didn't want to be with you any longer. That's a worry. And she's really important to you.
Yeah.
So in a way, it's not her getting the education that, that troubles you. It's how that may affect your relationship.
So, you know, she's smart enough, you know.
Doesn't need any more.
Sometimes she's too smart.
Already. What other kinds of troubles are there? Sounds like that's one piece of it. What else is happening?
She just goes on and on about it, you know. Just I try to eat and she talks about it. Try to sleep and she talks about it. I come home from work and she talks about it. I'm just like, oh man.
So it's like nagging, it's just constantly there.
It seems to be, I mean, that.
And you get real angry about that.
Yeah. She just wanted to stop.
Even though you're feeling angry about it, she just keeps pushing. She keeps.
I tell you enough.
But still she keeps talking about it.
Right.
Yeah. And what is it that has happened that has caused someone to say you need to be here? Was it the wife that said you need to come here?
I told her, you know, to stop. I told her, you know, she wouldn't. I was tired, you know. I was tired. Coming home from work, and I was tired.
You kind of got pushed to the limit.
Yeah. So I kind of slapped her, you know. Mm-hmm.
And that's what led to you being here when you get here.
Yeah. I guess somebody heard. I guess somebody saw. I don't know. They called the cops.
And the police came around.
Yeah. They told me. Asked me if I've been drinking. I told them I hadn't. They asked me if I was doing another junk. I said, no, man. Finally talked to one of them and said, I need to get some, you know, I need to see somebody. And they told me I couldn't do that again. Go to jail.
What do you make of that, of you were giving her? Is that, does that seem to you like it was the natural thing to do? You just got pushed to the limit? Do you feel badly about that?
No, I do feel bad about it. Because, you know, the kids saw, you know.
Attitude. Okay. What skills did you notice him using? You know, either of those or reflecting more than once the important content that he was hearing. Or even if he wasn't hearing, that he was sort of guessing was there. Because really, initially, this guy was pretty quiet and wasn't giving up a whole lot of information. Okay?
But I think he got more from him when he repeated the question more than once.
Okay. So tuning in what might be the important content and doing more than one reflection about that is part of what you notice. What else?
The tone in his voice. You know, that's a lot. The tone in your voice.
The tone being what?
Tone is, you know, not elevating your voice, not hollering, be on the same level. Because a lot of times our voice and the tone in our voice, the sound in our voice, mm-hmm. you know, can trigger a lot of things. So his tone was just like a quiet tone, mm-hmm. very calm, and in his voice.
Right, so he comes across just as kind of neutral, interested, but not overexcited. You know, that voice tone is very low key. Okay, yeah.
He also, I noticed he didn't take it personally that the man wasn't nice. Well, sometimes think people that are throwing you off and they're not looking at something, he didn't take it, kind of just maintain and accept the fact that the man was looking at the wrong, which could have been his way of trying to open up.
That's right. Okay, so paying attention to body language is important. So one of the things that we know about Native Americans is some Native Americans, when dealing with a majority person, you know, sort of don't make a lot of eye contact. And that's something they reserve for the time when they really feel more trusting and more connected. And so the fact that there was not a lot of eye contact, Miller didn't get offended or upset by that. He just sort of went with that and was respectful about that. Did you notice the time that the guy did make eye contact? What was happening then? There was one moment that was really, I think, a turning point in this session.
When he started speaking, they were abused.
He kind of smiled.
It was before that.
He was a little snicker.
Yeah.
And worked out. The moment I'm thinking about is when Miller says something like, you know, the guy's talking about his wife going back to school and how he doesn't think that's a good idea. And he says, so one thing about that would be bad or hurtful or something if she decides she didn't want to be with you anymore. And the guy looks up, you know, right, like wow, you nailed it, you know. Yeah, so he, in that moment, my interpretation of that is he really felt deeply understood, that was really his big concern. Now, you can imagine, if he went in and a counselor took a different approach, or, you know, maybe made some assumptions based on some police report they had in front of them or something about what was going on with this client, he may not have gotten to that deep level of understanding that he's really afraid his wife's going to leave him. Not to excuse that he's hitting her, but that's a big driver of what's going on. And so he was able to get more of that information out than if he had just been, what would have happened with this client had you fired a bunch of assessment questions at him? He would have left, shut down. Do you think he would have gotten much information?
No.
I think he was listening carefully. Okay, so her question is, was it just intuition that Miller knew the wife might leave him? And I think he was listening to the client's concerns, even the unstated ones. And he was making, to some extent, he was making some guesses.
Right.
Okay. Part of what's happening in this reflective listening example is there's some guessing going on because the guy's not really giving a whole lot. It's like one of the very first things he does, which I think is brilliant, is, you know, the guy says something like, well, I had to come because of problems. Well, you know, what do you do with that? Well, then he says, so you're not really used to talking to someone else about your problems. You sort of keep things to yourself. You know, that's a brilliant reflection because it's just saying, okay, I accept you, I hear you. You know, this is not comfortable for you. You're not happy about being here. Okay, we can sit with that. I accept that. Okay, so that's a reflection that sort of extends what the person really said. That, you know, you might say even verges into the guessing territory. You know, and yet, if you're a clinician who's got some years of experience, you probably have done that many times with your yes or intuit what's going on if you're listening carefully. Okay. What else did you notice that was going on in this 10 minutes then? What other skills did the counselor use?
Besides his voice being passive, replying his body, language also was very quiet, peaceful.
Right, right. He's got just everything about his approach is that calm, peaceful, accepting. You know, even when the guy said he slapped her, you know, I think they zoomed in on Bill, and Bill's just like sitting there quiet, you know, not really, you know, didn't get what? You know, you did what? You know, or agitated or changed his position or anything. He just sort of sat with that. And what does that do? What does that do for the therapy of relationship?
Build.
Because I can say anything, but you know, it's okay if I'm doing.
That's right. Yes, it builds that alliance. It makes the client feel like it's okay to be myself and to tell the truth, even if the truth isn't so pretty. You know, after all, I'm really not interested in the patient just pleasing me. You know, I'm not going to be able to help them if I don't know what the real story is. So I want to do whatever it takes to help them feel comfortable enough with me so that I can get more of the real story. So that's part of what's happening here strategically. Okay, other things you noticed about this tape?
Well, he controlled the flow.
Okay.
He controlled the flow, the structure of it. He was very calm, and he controlled it. He did not raise his voice, so his body language did not, you know, say something. So he kind of controlled the flow of that conversation.
So, yeah, it does seem like even though it's not confrontational or negative in any way, that the therapist is in charge in the session. And sort of conveying, you know, that calm, it's okay, we're going to talk about this attitude, helps the patient to go a little further. Okay. The other thing I wanted to point out was this issue of cross-cultural work. That, you know, in this case, this is, you know, white therapist, you know, middle-class academic type, working with Native American, who is, you know, probably a lower SES person, lower educated, who's already coming in saying, you know, he's concerned his wife is too smart already, you know. If the therapist's approach had been to, you know, take on some expert mantle, you know, use a lot of highfalutin words, you know, have a white coat on, you know, those kind of things, what do you think would have happened in their interaction? Right. There would have been so many barriers there. It would have been really difficult to overcome them, even with really good clinical skills. And so, you know, that's another thing to think about when you're considering using a motivational review approach. One reason I really like it is I feel like because it's so focused on me trying to understand that person in front of me, that individual, it really doesn't matter whether they come from a different subgroup than I do, you know? Because, in fact, if you're attending to them and trying to understand them in their experience and their background and the things that have impacted them, you're going to understand them at a deep level, regardless of things that externally you might have different. And so I think that this is a really nice approach for trying to do some cross-cultural work. And, in fact, the data show that motivational reviewing has a stronger effect with minority clients than with, you know, majority clients. So it's kind of interesting. And my guess about that is because it's collaborative and respectful, and people feel like they're being treated well, and you know, you're seeking to be understood. Okay, let me go back to the PowerPoint. throughout the room so that as you're talking to each other, you can hear each other well, but you're not too distracted by other people. So find a partner, and then let's spread out among all these chairs, okay? And then if there's somebody left over, we might have to make a group of three. So everybody find a partner. Go ahead now.
Thank you. You're cheating, you're jumping ahead.
Let's see what he does.
Being listened to so carefully. Okay. What about, was anybody a little less comfortable?
those sentences out, and I would stop and I would look, you know, usually waiting for someone to return or say something or allow them to speak or have their space.
Right. It's a little artificial, you know, to talk without having any response. Okay. For some people, though, it really gives them the space to think more carefully, maybe, and reassess some things. For other people, it's real uncomfortable for them if you let them go too long without some kind of acknowledgement or some kind of feedback. Okay. And what about, did any of you remember to do the distractors, the thing where you think you would, you know, suddenly become uninterested?
Yeah.
What did you do?
I looked at my cell phone, you know, that's like a but when I was really focusing on listening to her, and then I looked at myself, I just felt so
good. Okay.
And I had to apologize.
So you did it, but you felt rude. Okay, okay. Did anybody else do anything?
Yeah, we did, and I was looking over, and once I did, it just completely shut down. You know, like he's shot, like he really can talk. But once I started just looking around, it just completely shut down.
And knowing it's an exercise, you figure I was playing them all with him, so I know you're doing that. It was like I was in the mode of, you know, why you cut off right now? Why can't you like this cut off?
Right. So but, what that shows you is really the power of all those nonverbals, that attention, that paying attention and carefully tuning into somebody, really has it sucked you right into the role play. And then when he looks away, you felt cut off. It felt bad. Okay. Anybody else do anything creative? All right. Well, hopefully those are not things you do in real sessions. Okay. You know, I always hate to think about people who like to answer the phone during a session. Other stuff like that. I mean, unless it's somebody banging on the door that there's a fire, you know, if I'm in a session with somebody, I'm going to be paying attention to them and not really doing anything else. So, and even looking at the clock, I mean, it's good to be aware of what time it is, but better to put the clock in a place where you can easily see it out of the corner of your eye than someplace you have to look, you know, and see what time it is, because people feel interrupted and like you're not really there with them in that moment. Okay, good. So now what we're going to do is a little more advanced listening skill, okay? So the first thing to do is we're going to actually do this in groups of three. So go ahead and find a group of three. And for this one, it's really important for us to move around the room, because you guys are not going to be able to hear each other well enough unless you move around the room. So I want some people in the corner up there, some people down here, some people over here, some people over there. So go ahead and pick a group of three and get into your places. The form of the reflection is a statement, not a question. All right, listen to this and see if you can hear the difference. All right, so I might be talking to a client who's had a big fight with their mom, okay? Here's one way for me to say, to respond. You're angry with your mother? Is that a reflection or a question?
Question.
Question. Why? Why is that a question? What made it sound like a question?
Your intonation.
My intonation. My voice tone went up at the end. You're angry with your mother? Okay, that put a question mark at the end. Now listen to this. You're angry with your mother. That's a statement. I've now just reflected what I think I've heard. The reason you want to look at your voice tone and make sure it goes down at the end or stays neutral is because when you ask a question, even using the exact same words, it puts an implicit demand on the person, and it can interrupt the flow of conversation. And in contrast, when you use a reflection, which is a very simple statement, a simple rephrasing of what you've heard, when you've done it well, people just tend to keep going. They give you more. They explore more. They go into more depth. Okay, so one of the ways to know if you're doing it well is if the person just keeps on going. Now, sometimes you'll get it wrong. Maybe the person isn't angry with their mother. Okay? So then, usually what happens if you've done a reflection is not that people get offended and leave. They'll just say, oh, no, it's not that. It's more like this. So it's sort of a self-correcting process. You actually get better information even if you make a little mistake. So don't be afraid to be bold and put it in the form of a statement. State what you think you've heard and understood about the person, you know, what they've just said. Okay, so giving you that, here's what I'd like you to do. What we want to do is use open-ended questions, those questions that draw people out and draw for more information, and reflections, those statements where you're sort of here, showing that you've heard and understood what they've said. Okay? One person in the group of three is going to be a counselor. One person is going to be a client or a speaker. The other person is going to be an observer. And we're going to rotate this several times, so you're not going to get out of it. Okay? Everyone's going to have to play every role. Okay? So if you're feeling shy, everybody else is too. Okay? We'll make this a safe experience. It's not going to be scary for anyone. Okay. What we really want to do is be listening so well to the person that we don't have our own agenda in the mix at all. Okay, we just want to really understand the person. All right? Now, the speaker, this is the most important role. You can either be a client and sort of play a client's issue that you know well, but what I really recommend, if you feel safe enough to do this, is that you consider playing something from your own life, because then it's going to be much more realistic and you're going to be able to respond much more naturally, okay? And what I'd like you to talk about is something you feel two ways about, okay? Essentially something you have mixed feelings about, you're not resolved. Don't pick something that you're resolved about, pick something that maybe you're a little confused about, okay? Something you have some mixed feelings about. Again, not your deepest, darkest secret, but just something that you feel safe and comfortable sharing with your small group, okay? So, what we're going to do is we're going to do three rotations of about 5 minutes. The speaker is going to introduce the topic and say, you know, here's the thing I think I feel two ways about. The job of the counselor or listener is to use open questions and reflections exclusively. Try to stay away from closed questions. Try to stay away from other things. Just open questions and reflections. The observer's job is to note down, count how many open questions and how many reflections you hear as the conversation goes on, okay? I'm gonna let you go for 4 or 5 minutes in each direction, okay? And then we're gonna debrief it as a group. So let's go ahead, y'all decide who's gonna be first speaker, first counselor, and first observer.